Hi, this is Stephanie Gunning, and I'm pleased to welcome everybody to today's webinar with Brian Feinblum, who is the Chief Marketing Officer and a Vice President for Planned Television Arts. He has worked with hundreds of diverse and unique clients across many industries, including publishing, which is what we're going to talk about today. Brian is instrumental in matching new clients with the right services and servicing their specific needs. And he's developed services for his company and is respected as a great press kit writer. He's been in this business promoting best-selling authors and self-published books, motivational speakers, major businesses, leading nonprofits, and many influential trade associations since 1989. So what does that make it, about 22 years or something like that?
Yes.
If I'm counting correctly. I know you've worked with some amazing people, and you've worked for a few publishing companies. You've been with PTA for about a decade, I believe.
Yeah, 12 years.
Yeah, and Yoon and I did a terrific interview a couple of years ago, so it was really very timely when you reached out to me because the industry has changed so much
and
is continuing to change so much almost on a daily basis, and we're just heading into the Book Expo, which is an annual event that the American Booksellers Association puts together. And that's here in New York next week, so it couldn't be more timely to check in. So Brian, what is hot and what is not in author publicity? help us.
What a question! Yeah, I must profess we're all trying to figure it out. We've been trying to figure it out for a number of years now, and I certainly do have some insights I want to share. But it is a bit mind-boggling that just really in the last couple of years, perhaps since the recession began, and I think publishing had its own sort of recession even prior to the meltdown of the banks. Yeah, you know, publishing is going through some real changes, and some can be very good. I think it's that growing pain stage that we're still at, and so it frustrates people as to which way they should go. You know, you open up a newspaper today, you'll see stories about apps. You'll see stories about iPad. You'll see stories about LinkedIn going public and what does that mean, and borders shutting down stores and Amazon expanding and this and that. And your head just starts to spin. You don't know what to think. So I admit I understand where authors are coming from. I hear it every day from authors and publishers and literary agents that everyone is still trying to figure out, you know, which way to go. So really the first thing I see is that you kind of have to hedge your bets. You still have to do a little bit of everything to get you where you may potentially want to go. So what does that mean? It doesn't necessarily mean spending endless hours on Facebook and tweeting. I actually don't believe in spending a lot of time doing those things. They should be done, but in some sort of proportion to a larger marketing or promotional plan. You know, it's the same thing before the internet was popular and social networking sites were popular. You can't just say, I'm going to do a bunch of bookstore signings, or I'm going to do a big mass mailing to book reviewers. You're going to do a little bit of everything. So traditional media still counts. Social media still counts. Book signings are still relevant. All those things are still relevant, but I think each of them have been devalued. They're only worth a small piece of the puzzle.
So wait. So we have the internet, but all internet marketing is not the same, right?
We have
things like, you know, what I do, where I send out an e-zine and mm-hmm. I do webinars and I post a blog, you know, but the social media like Facebook and Twitter are different from that, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. They are different. And there's different levels of quality and quantity. I mean, let's start with bloggers. You know, everyone is trying to reach out to bloggers to get their book reviewed, talked about, something to happen with someone's audience to pay attention. So in that area alone, I think you have to designate a certain amount of time. How much time will you spend looking for bloggers? When you do find them, which bloggers are worth approaching? One person may say, well, everyone's worth approaching if they have 10 people or 1,000 people. In some ways, that's true. If you spent the time to find someone, it can't hurt to send them an email and say, hey, you want to review my book, or you want to exchange links, or do something that will promote traffic to your site. On the other hand, you really should just focus on the ones that are going to be more effective. We're, You're reaching your targeted demographic. You're reaching a bigger audience. You're reaching people who, well, aren't necessarily competing with you, but people who complement what you're doing.
How do you find out if a blogger is reaching your demographic?
Well, I think it takes some effort. You have to quickly look at their blog and see the voice of it. Look at the last three entries. Who do they appeal to? Who are they writing for? You can tell maybe by the comments what kind of people are commenting on the blog. Sometimes you can do more statistical analysis by looking at the traffic on Alexa and other places, you know, and that's important too. It's a lot of searching. I mean, I could see at my own firm at Plan Television Arts, when we have a client, we do a lot of time researching, probably more time I spent researching than actually contacting people, which is a shame because traditionally a publicist knows who to contact already and they just spend their time trying to effectively contact them and follow up and reach out. But here half the game is searching, and that's true with everything. I think the whole business world is trying to figure out how do we appear on search engines, how are we found, how are we viewed. You could just get lost out there.
Right, that's really why people still want to work with a publicist, too, because they want somebody else. You know, you're busy being an author, you're busy writing,
mm-hmm.
you're busy running a business or leading workshops, and then,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's great to have a person who actually enjoys that kind of research and reaching out, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's very time-consuming. It's a lot of follow-up involved, and you have to sort of speak their language. It's easy to offend someone in the media or a blogger because you just didn't word it the right way or there was some sort of expectation, and
mm-hmm.
they can be very sensitive about how you view them. So, yeah, I mean, the competition is fierce. It's ironic. It's like there are more opportunities than ever, and there's more competition, you know, than ever. There's a million new books published each year, according to Books in Print, which keeps a record of who applies for an ISBN every year. And so a million titles. Not that long ago, there were, you know, 500,000 titles. And 20 years ago or so when I got into publishing, it was only about 45,000 new titles were published each year. So the country has not grown big enough to absorb so many more books. And, of course, each book is not equal. There are a million titles, but they're not all selling many copies. In fact, most books don't sell many copies at all. When I say many, there's a substantial amount of books that are self-published, print-on-demand, that only sell in the hundreds of copies, if that many.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the one hand, maybe you look and say, well, they're not my competition, but they are competition when they're approaching the same blogger or the same reviewer or the same store for shelf space, for review space, for whatever. They may in the end not be as successful as you or many books, but for the moment, when everyone has the same great idea, you have a million people trying to approach the New York Times for a book review, and meanwhile their space is shrinking due to advertising revenue in decline, which is due to circulation size being in decline, which is due in part to the recession and the internet.
I have to admit, you're kind of depressing me. I shouldn't laugh, but it is kind of ironic. You know, on one hand, we have this digital revolution, which is putting all this technology in our hands and liberating us. And on the other hand, we're overwhelmed because we don't know how to prioritize.
Yes, but again, I think it's because of the growing pains. I'm seeing a little bit of the growing pains shifting. I think when iPad came out last year, that seemed to make a difference in terms of the ebook market. For better or for worse, that has become more established, more of a player, more of an influencer in the number of books being sold and the pricing of books, and then in the long term, how books are promoted and marketed. So some things, I think, are starting to take hold. Eventually, the media companies and the digital companies have to establish what the marketplace is. It seems right now there's so much changing going on. And it's true, our society as a whole is just changing faster and things are developing quicker. But I think when it comes to the book industry, which is not used to fast growth or fast change, once we start to establish the players, we've gotten used to the idea that Amazon is a leader. We still recognize Barnes & Noble as a leader. Borders somehow are surviving. People still read Publishers Weekly. They may read Publishers Lunch now and other great blogs like yours. You know, there is some familiarity and some establishment going on, but it's still changing. Once we can settle on, all right, here's where the market is, then I think people can have a plan of attack. But because the market is literally shifting in how a book is published, where it's sold, who promotes it, that's why we're all over the place. And it's like a big gold rush. We're all fighting for something, trying to figure out where is it.
Right.
The only difference is we don't really know where the mine is. You know, we're digging and digging, but we're not sure if we're even in the right spot. It's like a big treasure hunt. And, you know, I'm finding that now. I just launched my blog. Even though I've been in PR and marketing for so many years, I've resisted writing a blog because I thought, well, isn't everything out there? You know, am I going to add something new? But I realize I can add something new. I do have a unique voice based on my experiences, and I want to get it out there. But now I feel like the authors I'm trying to promote, I realize, wow, I got to contact these key bloggers and other people to get that traction going. But it will happen. I think the key is that people need to realize more than ever, you can't just sit back for this to happen. It used to be people got published by a traditional publisher and thought, oh, my publisher will take care of me. Rarely was that the case even 20 years ago. Most publishers weren't able to invest the time and money on most of their titles in terms of a real promotional effort. And it's even more true now. So authors have to take it into their hands, which they're trying to, where they hire someone to do it on their own, but they can't necessarily count on a publisher, especially if they are the publisher. But in terms of positive trends, the things that I do see is the whole idea of affiliate sales and partnerships. I think that that's a solid way to approach things for people.
Can you define those terms a little bit for people?
Sure. I mean, so again, let me just lay the foundation. So you have a book that's coming out. Certainly, the key thing is months and months before your book is actually going to be released, there's certainly things you should be doing, whether it's contacting appropriate media, which is typically long lead or print media, whether it's as you get close to the publication date, you're contacting bloggers or radio stations or local venues to speak. So things can happen months before a book comes out. That, for the most part, people understand that. I mean, it's a bigger timeline that goes to it, but that all is still the same. But what's changing is once the book is out or close to being out, it seems like the attention of people or the shelf life is shorter. And so the best way, I think, to make an inroads with selling a book is to develop partnerships. So let's say your book is it's about losing weight or something related to diet and fitness. We know that there are many, many blogs, organizations, and stores that are connected to that subject matter. You can approach some of them and say, hey, do you want to be an affiliate of mine? And you basically send them a code, we'll call it a code or a link, that you send to them. And when they send out information about your book to their list of people, let's say you contact a blogger who has a list of 5,000, you know, subscribers, and they send it out to their list, and people then click on that coded link and purchase the book, the sale will be credited to the person who sent out that link. And so they'll get a commission. It could be a percentage. Sometimes it's a big percentage, sometimes it's a smaller percentage. But you can eventually get other people to sell your book for you. The incentive for them is that they'll send out information about your book and they'll make money every time a book is sold. If nothing is sold, they don't lose anything. They just sent out a link to their people. It's not really a big deal. So in a simplified way, that's one of the ways that I think that people can make money. Even Amazon has some sort of affiliate program where you can sign on, and when you sell someone else's book, you can get a small commission check. So I can certainly get people more information about that if they want to follow up after the conversation. But this term affiliate marketing, you can just Google it, is one way to go. But in general, partnerships, publicity and marketing always depends on relationships and partnerships. So when it comes to traditional media, you know, it's straightforward. Either a radio show is going to believe you're going to be a good guest for their show or they're not, and that's that. When it comes to the marketing and sales side, beyond the bookstores is really where books are going to sell now, and they are selling. I think more books are being sold now than in traditional bookstores. You have a lot of stuff going on online, and not just at Amazon. People are selling books in all kinds of ways through organizations and associations. Some do trades or giveaways. They sell it. They may give their book to an organization like a nonprofit and say, here, use my book as a fundraiser. Just give me back, you know, I'm making up a number, give me back $4 per copy. And maybe it only costs you $2 per book to print if it's a paperback book. And you're still making some money, and more importantly, you're branding your book. So it's a combination of things. You know, that's a good trend, actually, to talk about. There's this whole trend of giving things away for free. Give away a chapter. Give away your blog. Give away content. Give away, you know, whatever, your mother-in-law. Give away everything.
I'm calling your mother-in-law, Brian.
You know, there's a time and place for that. I think it's a good idea to give people teasers or sampling, sure, why not? Especially online, people have no other way to know if something is interesting or good unless they have a sample of it.
Right.
But on the other hand, we've gone too far. We're practically giving away the book to sell something else now. That seems to be one trend, that people will write a book, but really it's not the book they're trying to sell. they're trying to sell some other product, a service, consulting, or maybe they're trying to sell a big, to get themselves a bigger book deal, so they just want a book to get wide coverage and distribution. And it's not necessarily a bad idea, but we're getting to the point where everything is free, free, free. Writers, I think, are screwing themselves. Excuse my
language. Right, it's
my
kind
language.
Of devaluing
what
we're doing. But
yeah.
But
you've got
e-books
signed for 99 cents. I mean, that's crazy.
It's interesting because I think that there's a way also to have partnerships with people who have radio programs, who are really looking for feed the minds and the spirits of the people who share the interests of the host. And so that's like a producer partnership. And I kind of feel that way about certain off the book page reporters. It's like if you're really deeply into a particular category or a theme of subject matter, and there's some kind of reporter who really follows that regularly, like an environmental reporter or a commodities reporter or any kind of reporter, and that if you take the time to really educate yourself to the wider conversation that's going on in your area, then that's going to create opportunities for you. I think it's when people wait too long that you can't create these opportunities for yourself in 5 minutes.
No, it is a process.
And yeah, so that's where I think that some authors are a little bit shallow in their approach to publicity.
Also, I think authors or people in general, we think that there's sort of a procedure for this type of thing, that there's only one way to approach someone, or which is not true. You know, there are many ways. And I think being persistent, making phone calls, I mean, that is a lost art. I see it even in my own firm when we're doing primarily online-oriented campaigns where we're trying to go after bloggers and the like. The tendency is to email them because we think, okay, they live online. But not all bloggers demand that you have to email them. There are plenty of people who would welcome your phone call, certainly if it's appropriate. So it's interesting that a simple technique like picking up the phone may put you ahead of half your competitors, because all they're doing is emailing, and there's no real dialogue. It's easy to get ignored or caught up in spam filters when you're emailing people. But if you phone call them with something relevant and timely and you've done some research, they'll appreciate that. So part of it has to do maybe with the approach it's taken by people. The other thing is, don't look at something as being one thing, meaning, you know, you look at someone and think, okay, that's a store. That person's a newspaper journalist. People now wear multiple hats, and everything is sort of changing. You even look at a place like Amazon. If you say, what does Amazon do? Someone says, oh, Amazon sells books and other stuff, but they also publish books, and they also do,
I know, but
consulting.
That's very new. I just saw in PW that they're launching another imprint.
Yep, and they've always so it's amazing. So that everyone's getting to each other's business. You look at Netflix. What is Netflix? Oh, that you can get videos and movies, you know, streamlined or mailed to your house. But now they're producing original content. They are working with a couple of companies to now create, in essence, a channel. They won't be on TV, but they're going to be the same as a network, because they're going to have original stuff that was never aired anywhere else. So everyone is changing a little bit. You go into Barnes & Noble, you know, they sell books, but in some ways they publish books, because they have a division that's book publisher that they own. Plus they have Nook, which is more, they're into technology and soon to be selling ads and other things. So every industry is sort of spreading out into what they do. And so you shouldn't look at something as just being one thing. And going back to the media, you can develop a relationship with an individual. When you contact someone at a radio show or the Wall Street Journal or wherever, sure, your goal might be to get coverage in that media outlet. But they're also individuals. That journalist may like you and say, hey, you know what, I belong to this other club, or I recommend you do this. If you develop a relationship with them, you'll open up more doors to more things in your area.
Yeah, I really have observed that when people genuinely, and genuine is the operative word, contact somebody and they write a fan letter or a letter of appreciation about something that they read in an article or heard on the radio or whatever, a very authentic conversation ensues. And if you're if you're not just trying to get, what's in it for me,
right.
These relationships can really go, become very mutually supportive. And it's surprising because, for me, that's what the technology does. It makes everybody reachable, you know.
Yes, that's right.
And I agree with you that a phone call is way more... it's warmer, it's more human. You can hear more in someone's tone of voice than you can in an email, you know.
Sure.
Which is not to say a well-crafted email can't be a beautiful thing.
No, I agree. And maybe, and maybe that's the first line of offense. Is certainly email is cheap and accessible, but definitely phone calls, and where possible, meeting people. And it depends on which city you're in or who you're trying to reach. But when you can have an in-person meeting, like I love Book Expo. You mentioned it's next week, and it's great to be in front of people. There's nothing like it. And when you talk to people, you're not just talking about the thing you want them to know about. You get to know them as a person, which is how you develop a relationship. I mean, it's a lot different when you go to lunch with someone versus, an email exchange.
Yeah. Do you find that, this is a question coming in on screen, do you find that self-published books get the same kind of reception, from the media that are offering free publicity to people, or are traditional published books still the way to go?
I think the gap, there is a distinction still, but the gap is narrowing. And I think the place where there's still the biggest prejudice, so to speak, would be with book reviewers at newspapers and magazines.
Mm-hmm.
If it's off the book page, if you're calling a business editor and you got a business book, it almost doesn't matter who published it. They're interested in the credentials of the author, the topic that you're going to speak about as an expert, and the quality of the book. So luckily, it's closing. A lot of radio producers don't seem to care. Television producers, I think, pay attention to a degree, but they never actually say to me, if I'm representing a self-published book, that, oh, he or she's not with a big publisher. I only hear that from the print people, mostly the book reviewers. But I do think that television is paying attention to bigger things in terms of, you know, they want the big-name person, the celebrity, someone connected to their network. Those are big factors. So to answer your question, it's still... means something to be published by a traditional publisher, but it's becoming less and less of a distinction by most of the media.
Right. I think again that, you know, this thing about standards and quality is something that if you're your own publisher, I find that some people kind of they don't know how to tell the difference between high quality or low quality. And that's where working with experts in the publishing industry can really help you. I mean, to toot my own horn, I'm a very good editor. And that's because for 28 years I've been immersed in books. And so I can see things in books that a lot of other people can't see. I mean, surprising little details. And, you know, I'm not even trying to sell my services right now, but everybody needs to have an editor. Even if you have a publisher, they'll provide one to you, but you might even need one prior to delivering your manuscript to a publisher, you know. And if you're going to self-publish, you definitely need to get some support from somebody. And that goes for design as well, and it goes for cover artwork. You know, you need to you need a book to look like a book that somebody can really digest, that does its job, you know. Presumably you have those credentials to carry it off, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I mean, it's amazing. There are so many books now that do look professionally published, just like something out of Simon & Schuster or HarperCollins, and then there's still some books that don't that fall short of that. And I agree, you know, the editing, the design, the cover, the length of the book, the quality of the paper, all these things contribute to how a book is perceived. And certainly if there are too many misspellings or something else egregious, it does turn off the reader or the media. But luckily with technology and the availability of professionals like yourself, people can really produce a quality book. It's terrific.
And, you know, not every book is intended to be on the New York Times list. That's not the purpose, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be everybody's goal. I mean, that's a really nice goal, and you know, those kinds of books are great fun to work on when you're in publishing because it really, like, feeds your ego. But, you know, you might want to be publishing a family history mainly, you know, for your family members and you know, a certain community to read, or you know, so perhaps you're going to sell 1,000 copies, you know, and then that's a very fine outcome. You know, for that you don't necessarily need a lot of publicity. You just need, you know, the publicity that brings it to your niche, you know. Do you think it's better to, in this day and age with the digital stuff and the social media marketing, if books are even more narrowly focused than before?
I think it depends on the – yeah, it's a good question. I think it depends on the subject matter. And what the competition is, you know, specialization, I think, is certainly on the increase, and also being able to distinguish yourself from the others that are out there. There are a lot of books on a lot of subjects. I mean, I get them every day. I get what seems to be the same type of diet book, the same type of business book, the same type of self-help book. Well, the only thing that's unique about it is the author, you know, and how much of their voice comes through in their personality, and is that enough to sell the book? So it is a good question. I don't think it's a definitive answer.
Right, right. It's something that I think about a great deal. I mean, I was sort of joking yesterday with a friend saying, you know, I edit a lot of spiritual material, and I was like, it would have to be a very special meditation book to attract me to work on another one. Because I really feel like I've done that. A lot, which is not to say that I don't highly value meditation. You know, I just want, you know, an approach, you know, some angle on it that's very specific. You know,
right. Well, I think strategically, I would suggest you still have a book that's kind of broad on a topic, but there's got to be at least that one chapter in that book that's going to appeal to someone that says, for that alone, I want to buy the book. And so let's say your great idea really comes down to 20 pages, and that's the equivalent of a chapter in a book. You're right. You could just sell that booklet or whatever, if that's what you mean, something smaller, or expand on it, but focus on that one topic. Or you could do the broader thing, but highlight the one big chapter that you know is what people really want and that they'll pay the money for. But you can charge more money for it that way. If you have a bigger book, you can justify, you know, $20 or whatever the price may be versus here's a $4.99 e-booklet.
Right.
You know,
right.
People are experimenting now. I mean, you see people, they come out with a book, and then they break down all the chapters and sell the chapters off as their own little mini e-books, hoping that they'll, you know, get traction that way. It's one big experiment. I don't know which way to go at this point.
Well, you know, we're actually coming to the end of our half hour here. This has been incredibly fast and very interesting, and I could go on talking to you forever and ever. I just want to say to listeners that, if you do need some support, Planned Television Arts, which is the company that Brian works for, is one of the leaders and has been for the whole time I've been in publishing, actually for about 25 or more years. And, you know, you can contact Brian. What's the website, Planned TV Arts?
PlannedTVArts.com, and just look under, you'll find my name there under the bios for the manager.
I think I put a link here, and you can also go to his blog. There's a link here to Brian's blog and reach him through that. That should be interesting reading to keep up on in the future as things develop. Do you have any famous last words you want to leave them with?
Yeah. don't be neither discouraged nor falsely encouraged. In other words, keep at it. You're writing at the core of it because you thought you had a good idea. You love writing. You like communicating. If those are the reasons that you're in it, you're going to persevere and find a way to also make money from what you do. But if you approach it as, let me find a way to make money and just slap something together, that's never going to work, and you're not going to serve people that way. So just keep at it. I think things will settle down, and stick to the basics. Quality writing, quality outreach, and persistence. Don't expect anyone to do it but yourself.
I think that's very good advice, and persistence is really the name of the game.
Sure.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank
this
you.
It's been great. I appreciate it. And what's your Twitter name?
I don't even give it out. It's the PR. It's the PR expert. I tweet every so often, but go to the blog.
Book Muffing
Buzz Blog.
I like tweeting. I'm audacious editor. All right.